Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is it! The time has come!
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
Push him down.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night with Adam Catterall and Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that
on Talk Sport.
Welcome to the Fight Night podcast. I'm Adam Catterall. It's a pleasure once again to be in your company. I haven't done this for a long period of time. I know that the boys knocked out a podcast for you last week, but I personally haven't been with you for ages. So it's great to be back, and it's great to be back talking to some of the biggest names in the world of fight sports, of which you're going to hear on this podcast. If it's the first time you've ever come to this, by the way, please hit subscribe on the old iTunes. And if you can write us a five-star review, it just helps us with our visibility in the iTunes charts. It helps us get to more people and hopefully continue us being able to bring you more content in the not-too-distant future. Right, let's get on with it, rather than me just witter on, because you're going to want some boxing news first and foremost, aren't you? There's a big fight on the horizon in the heavyweight division. Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua. Let's get an update with Frank Warren. Mr. Frank Warren, how are you, sir? Welcome to the show.
I'm feeling much better than I was.
Well, yes, I think that's where we should start the conversation, because we all heard about what happened over Christmas. I've seen you, obviously, on various outlets over the last week or so. You look well, you're sounding well, but I'm sure that it was a worrying time over the Christmas period.
Yeah, I got tested positive for COVID and spent a bit of time in hospital with because it got a bit difficult for me with the breathing. But yeah, I'm home now, so that's the main thing, and trying to get back into it.
Have Arsenal picked up your spirits this evening after watching that? You nearly sent me to sleep, Frank. I don't know about you, pal.
We missed a couple of good chances, but, you know, without three players, and I've got to be honest, I was expecting the worst, and I thought under the circumstances we'd done okay.
You did a fantastic interview with Alan Hubbard, the former sports editor of The Observer, and it's a really serious point, this, in that you really praised the NHS staff that looked after you, the hospital staff, and you were making a very good point in Alan's column that it's really important that people take this seriously, because when you've had a few days of not being able to breathe properly, it's actually pretty frightening.
Well, it is, and if people can't take it seriously with all what's going on and seeing the amount of fatalities and the amount of people who were testing positive, then they've got to be crazy. And these idiots who say that it's a hoax and, you know, the hospitals are not full, they're mad. I've been there, I've seen it, I've experienced it, and I've seen the difficulties that people are in, have been, you know, fellow patients, and a couple of them are really bad. I mean, I was struggling, and as you just mentioned, the NHS staff, you know, the nurses, the doctors, the orderlies, you know, they're cleaning people are cleaning, you know, the ladies serving food. Everybody was just brilliant in putting their lives on the line. And when you hear all this garbage that's being spouted by these so-called disbelievers, who actually prefer to call morons, it's beyond me. And the danger they are to their fellow citizens, with this mentality and their behaviour. It's just ridiculous.
Because you said, I read in the column, there was a guy in there that had been in there several months. There were people in there who were really, really struggling and close to death. And you describe it in real detail to Alan Hubbard. It sounded really frightening.
Well, it was. I mean, you know, you're in an environment where, first of all, I mean, you know, I've had a couple of operations last year on my back, and you know, I'm lucky enough to have some private health, so I had them done privately. And obviously, you get visitors and so forth, but there's no visitors. You can't even get a newspaper. Because you're hooked up to oxygen, it's not like you can, you know, you can. Well, you're just hooked up, so you're in bed. And that's what happened, and it's you're thinking that, you know, what I've got to do to get out of here. I mean, in the end of the day, for me, I sort of made myself get up. And rather than, you know, have all the, they were doing bed baths and things, I went into the, have a shower, shave. But I mean, going in there, it was the first couple of times I just could just about breathe, and not be sideways, and then to, you know, you come back and you're in there, and then I made my mind up that I had to do something about it. So I'd get up and try and walk. And outside the ward, there was a long corridor where the other wards were and the nurse's station. So I started walking that and doing as much as I could. And gradually, you know, the doctor was pleased that I was doing that. And he actually said to me, "You'll walk yourself out of it." And that's what I did. So I was quite lucky to be able to do that and get myself out. But it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. And looking at people in terrible difficulties and, you know, at the end of the day, with their breathing, that's what it is. It's your lungs and the coughing and trying to catch your breath. It's just horrible.
Well, it's great to hear you so well. Let's crack on with the big topic. Obviously, the biggest fight in boxing out there right now is obviously Tyson Fury versus Anthony Joshua. It's really good to hear. Everybody seems to be on the same page, pushing forward. As I just said there, Gareth spoke to Tyson. He's in a good place. He says he's leaving it to yourselves in order to get this fight over the line. And we've had some good developments, haven't we, with the WBO? Because that was one of the stumbling blocks where we thought that maybe there'd be mandatory situations and various things like that. Maybe that belt wouldn't be involved in a big unification. But it's looking very, very likely that all the marbles are going to be on the line for this one.
They will be. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, that's good for Tyson and AJ. And it's also good for Joe Joyce. He's going to get a crack at Usyk for the interim title.
Have you got dates in mind that you're working towards, Frank? When do you think that we'll see Tyson and AJ in the ring?
Well, I think everybody wants to get it on in May or June, and that's what we're working towards. And obviously, it depends on what happens with COVID and where it's going to take place, because no decision's been made. But we've got to get the contract finalised first and signed off, and that hasn't happened yet. But we, Bob and I were on the phone on Friday night with the lawyers, and we was going through the agreement, and we got another call, and then we'll send it back to Matchroom with our comments on it, and hopefully, you know, we're a bit of luck. We could get it over the line next week if we're all on the same, literally on the same page.
That's big. And are you looking at a two fight deal? Are we maybe thinking of being able to do two this year, or are we just getting greedy?
No, I think it's out there. So I'm not sort of revealing anything that's not already been said. It will be a two-fight deal, and hopefully both fights will go on this year.
I understand, Frank, that an initial draft contract has either landed or is landing in the next couple of days for you guys to examine from AJ's camp. Is that right?
Well, that's absolutely correct. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So, you know, we'll look at it and obviously make our comments and get it back. But, I don't think we're far off of getting this done.
And at that point, once that's signed, our understanding is that you then go out to sites, go out to the countries, go out for dates, and then you move on with the whole thing and the two men can get into camp.
Well, I mean, that is true. But we're getting approaches. You know, there's Top Rank, there's Matchroom sales involved in this, and we're all getting approaches from various territories about putting this on. So we'll see what, you know, but until it's signed, it doesn't mean nothing. You know, we've got to get once we've got the agreement, you know, once we get it agreed and everybody signs off on it, all the interested parties, then we can move forward.
It's hard to plan for venues, isn't it? Because the ideal situation would be to do it in the UK. We've got two fantastic British heavyweights there. You want to do it in front of, what, 90,000-100,000 people to be able to see. But with COVID, it's looking very unlikely that we could do that. But would that be the dream to be able to do that for the second fight? If the first one, for example, is in the Middle East, would the dream to be able to bring them back and be able to do that, say, at Wembley?
The dream to be to do them both here, rightly said, Adam. It's, you know, it's a problem. And at the moment, we don't, you know, no one knows what's happening from, you know, from 1 week to the next. I mean, I think we've had this conversation, when we took him in the past, and it's always about when we're going to get crowds back. Like I've always said all along, I've got no idea. I've got to be honest, no one's got any idea. Yeah. Not until this virus is controlled, not until people have got the vaccination. And once everybody's vaccinated, and we're going to have to get vaccinated, even, again, the doubters there. And I can understand why people, you know, may not want a vaccination, but the fact of the matter is, like a flu jab, that's what we're going to have to do. Because if we're going to open up and try and get back to some sort of normality, everybody's going to have to do this. Otherwise, it's just going to continue. It will continue.
Here's one for you, Frank, for the undercard of that. And I know that you're probably not even thinking about that right now because you're thinking about the men fight. But because of what's happened with the WBO, there's a wonderful opportunity there for Joe Joyce and Alexander Usyk. Do you think we could get that on the same card as Fury AJ?
No.
I'm getting greedy now, aren't I?
You're getting very greedy. No, but, you know, that fight's a standalone fight. And,
it is. You're right.
You know, in an ideal world, we want to do it over here.
But the WBO have seen sense with that, aren't they? That they're allowing that belt still be on the line.
Yeah,
and then
they've been very accommodating to you know, not get in the way of stopping this super fight.
Mm. Moving on to other things, obviously you've got a date coming up on February 27th. We've got Jamel Herring on the show a little bit later on. We're looking forward to this one. It's an absolute cracker. How delighted are you that this, I suppose, is the opening, I know it's a little bit late, but the opening of 2021 for Queensbury, bringing this possibly historic night for Carl Frampton to the British fans?
Well, I hope it is for him because, you know, he comes through that. I mean, he sets himself up as being, for me, the most successful Irish boxer if he wins three titles at three different weights. And he's got a great chance of doing that. I really do. He believes he can win the fight. And Herring's a good fighter, but so you know you're going to get a good fight. But I think Carl's up for it. It's a fight we obviously tried to put on last year. I think it was last June, I think it was. Yeah. But obviously the lockdown knocked that on the head. So hopefully I'm quite sure we'll get it away and see a cracking fight with both of them.
Two other little bits from me. We just spoke about Joe Joyce. Obviously, you gave us a cracking fight between him and Daniel at the back end of last year. What's the latest with Daniel? Have you had many conversations with him? What's the plan for getting Daniel back out this year?
Yeah, we have. We had a video call Friday before. He's got to go back to see. He's been seeing two specialists. One for the fractures that he had on his eye socket. Yeah. And he's cleared those, but he's got to go back to see the retina specialist. And that's on the 5th of February. And provided he gets all clear, he can then resume training. And we're looking to try and get him out, if gets that all clear, in May. So fingers crossed that he does. And, you know, he's got the bit between his teeth. He just wants to get back in the ring. Mm-hmm. He had unfortunate injury. Joe done extremely well. Well, they both did. They gave a great fight. It was a good fight to watch. You know, it was a lot of punches thrown in the fight, and he's a young man, and he feels that he can still do it. And a lot of pressure on him now. You know, when he comes back, there'll be a lot of pressure on him, but he's really up for it. He's quite philosophical about everything.
And final one from me is. We're going to speak in a moment on the show about the Canelo-Billy Joe Saunders fight maybe being made. And the byproduct of that, I hope, is going to be that Andrade fights Liam Williams. What's the latest with that situation? Because I keep up to date with Liam on social media and he's chomping at the bit, is the kid, isn't he? He's desperate for getting over there and doing the business.
He is. They go to purse bids, I think, next week. I think they've called for the purse bids. I think we're going to get notice on Monday where it's going to be. So purse bids, because we can't agree terms, so we go to purse bids, and whoever wins the purse bid, will put it on. And I really do think that Liam's got a fantastic chance of beating Andrade. I really do. He's you know, since he's gone up to Dominic Ingle and also moved up into weight, he's much more comfortable. It seems to be at middleweight. He's had two fantastic performances, and mentally he's really on it. So if he's ever going to do it, now's the time. Mm-hmm. What I was concerned with, I see a tweet they put out, Andrade saying he was weighing around 200 pounds.
Jeez. Well, he's had a bit of turkey at Christmas, isn't he?
It looks like a couple of ostriches.
I mean, well, yeah, exactly.
20 pounds over the anyway.
Frank, going back to the Joe Joyce Alexander Usyk fight. Obviously, Joe was brilliant against Daniel Dubois. Do you fancy Joe to beat Usyk? And does he rightfully be the guy in place then, do you believe, to fight the winner of Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua potentially early in 2022, or does he have another fight? Because surely if he beats Usyk, and I think he will beat Usyk, does he wait for his big opportunity then?
Well, the first answering the last question first, the WBO in the flyer they put out, they said the winner of the first fight between Tyson and AJ has to defend against him, or there'll be stripped.
Yeah.
Sorry, defend against the winner of Usyk and Joyce, or they'll be stripped. Mm-hmm. As for Joe, and Usyk, I fancy him. Mm-hmm. You know, I also fancy Daniel Dubois, but basically because I think they're too big for him. I think he was an unbelievably great, really great cruiserweight champion. But he's late 20s, a guy going up from cruiserweight to heavyweight and growing into it. I think he's about 34 now. And that's quite an old age to be going up in weight. And you know, I watched him fight against Chad. I see the tape against Chad Witherspoon, which I think he stopped him in 7 rounds. And I obviously see him against Derek Chisora. And I just feel that he has the... I really do think that he if he comes in with that weight off like he did in the last fight against Daniel Dubois, I think he's got a real good chance against him. And I think as the fight goes on, it'll be more his fight. You know, Usyk's going to be fast, but having said that, he's not a natural heavyweight. And Joe's going to be, I think Joe really does have a great chance of beating him.
There you go. A little bit of an update from Frank Warren. So expect some big announcements soon. One big announcement that Frank has already pushed out. We talked about it briefly there in that conversation. On February 27th, Jamel Herring, the WBO Super Featherweight Champion, is coming to town. And he's taking on Carl Frampton, who himself hopes to become a three-weight world champion. Well, the champ, Jamel Herring, joined us on the show at the weekend to talk through this bout on Feb 27th. Here he is.
Like you guys know as well, I agreed to go to Belfast in Carl's backyard with no issue. I never once complained. I never once made a rant about who's the A side, B side, mumbo jumbo that you see today in today's boxing world. I just wanted to go travel the world and give the fans a great fight. Even if I was going to be the, in enemy territory, I had no issue going to Belfast because I believed in me and I have a great team. And then, you know, when the pandemic hit, of course, things had changed. But even when I was told by my team at MTK Global about coming to London, I was ecstatic. I still thought at that time I was going to get, that great UK atmosphere and crowd. So, I had no issue coming overseas to defend my world title. But that just goes to show you, you know, just how much I believe in me. And like I said, I take the title world champion very seriously. I don't believe that, you know, world champion should just sit in one, you know, one area of the world. I believe a world champion should, you know, go wherever the fight is wanted at.
Good evening, Jamel. I just wanted to ask you, and it is lovely to have you on the show again. I just wanted to ask you, obviously it's your third defense of the WBO super featherweight title.
Right.
Lamont Roach, obviously, you won it against Masayaki Ito. You defend mm-hmm. against Lamont Roach and Jonathan Okwendo. Do you consider, Carl, given his experience in, you know, being a world champion in two other weight divisions, do you consider this to be the toughest defence so far, or do you not? Do you see him as over the hill? We've talked about him last week about this is his last opportunity, he feels, to win a world title and become a historic figure with a world title in three weight divisions. How do you see him as a fighter, and does it help him that you're having to come over here to fight him?
I think Frank Warren said it best maybe last week or early in the week in a recent interview. Even if me coming over there, in terms of right now dealing with the pandemic, it's not really much of a difference in terms of, basically where it's at with the crowd backing whoever, because pretty much there is no crowd, you know. So for that point, you know, it's much of a 50-50 setting. But I also can't say if he's going to be the toughest opponent, but I will say he'll be the the biggest name that I came across, and I respect Carl. You know, like I tell everybody, you know, who asks, I'm a fan of Carl Francis. You know, I enjoy watching his fights in the past, and I'm not looking for an over the hill Francis, because like I said, when you feel like this is your last chance, some people take it as their back is against the wall. And this could be, you know, this the last shot to make something big. And not to mention, you know, he has his legacy on the line. He wants to make history. So I'm obviously preparing for the best Carl Frampton, but I can't really say this will be my, you know, my toughest opponent to date. But definitely, out of respect, he is the biggest name that I've come across in my own career.
When you look at the stats alone, you're 5 inches tall. You've got a 7-inch reach advantage.
Right.
One understands how the game plan should be as a result, you know, and you've got a very fine jab. You can fight and you can box. Can you make this an easy night for yourself?
If we're being honest, I think any champion will hope to make any fight an easy night for themselves. But, you know, yeah, like...
You know what I'm asking. We want
to last long in the game, but if I go back to what got me to winning the world title, then yes, definitely that can make an easy fight. Me and my team, I spoke about going to do old things that we did before the My Secret Ito fight. So we're going back to what worked, you know, what got us here to begin with. And I believe if I just listen to my corner and implement the game plan, then of course we can make it an easy fight. But I do expect at times for Carl to come out hard and try to bring his best when the things get tough in there. But I have to just basically stay calm, keep my composure, and just fight my fight at the end of the day.
Jamel, talk to me about the pride that you hold of being able to carry on the lineage of Marine boxers. Obviously, your past life as a Marine, and we've seen guys come out of the Marines and do extremely well in the world of boxing, the likes of the Ken Nortons and the Leon Spinkses of this world. Yeah. What does it mean to you to be able to carry on that lineage?
Oh, it means a lot. I mean, like you said, those two individuals alone that you just mentioned, they beat the great Muhammad Ali. You know, even if they didn't have the best careers afterwards, you know, they still got to, you know, hold that over their head that, you know, they got a win over the greatest of all time. And I feel like even a win over Carl Frampton is definitely a great thing for my own legacy. And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned the Marine Corps tradition. You know, those guys, obviously they were heavyweight, so they wasn't like they can go to another division and, you know, and win all the world titles. But, you know, as a Marine, I want to be known as a Marine that's also won world titles in different weight divisions as well. You guys know from my past, you know, I tried to unify in my own division, but it seemed like I always kept hitting a roadblock, which is actually why we went the route of, you know, calling for Carl Frampton, because I respect Carl for stepping up, because, you know, you guys know I tried to fight Miguel Pacheco in the unification. That fell through. Mm-hmm. Even after the Roche fight, you know, me and Miguel had fought a week apart. So you would think that'll be the roadmap leading to a unification finally. But then all of a sudden Oscar Valdez popped up in the scene, and then we see what happened there. So I had to find a dance partner and, you know, to build my own legacy, and Carl Frampton is a great name to have. But after this fight, I do want to continue that Marine Corps tradition and fighting in other bigger fights as well.
And speaking of lineage as well, just speaking of multi-weight world champions, I know that you're very proud of where you come from in Long Island. I don't think there's been a multi-weight world champion from Long Island, has
there? No, Buddy McGirt, welterweight. Yeah. He was a welterweight. And my good friend, Chris Algieri, he's a junior welterweight champion. And then I'm the third one. So, again, like I said, I have the chance in my own career to do something amazing, not only for the Marine Corps, but Long Island as well. And that's why I'm taking this fight very seriously, because this can start, you know, to great things before I decide to when I want to, you know, move on from my own career to other things as well.
That guy is absolutely top class. Can't wait for him to hit the UK, and hopefully we get to interview him a few more times as we build up towards that big title fight with Carl Frampton. Still to come, you're going to hear from Lawrence Okoli. Joseph Parker is going to be on the podcast as well, so stick around for that. But right now, a familiar surname, but not too familiar forename. It is, of course, the son of Ricky Hatton, Campbell Hatton, who gets his professional career underway on March the 6th. We caught up with him on Saturday night. I'm a big fan of nicknames, right? Massive fan of nicknames of fighters. And I tell Josh Taylor this all the time. Tartan Tornado, whoever came up with that, is an absolute genius. Come on, Campbell, give it to us now, man. Who was behind the Hurricane? Who came up with this?
Do you know what? I can't. I've got in my head it with my Uncle Matthew. Because he told me about the film, about Hurricane Carter. And so he said Hurricane Hatton, and I've always liked it. So I sort of stuck with it. But I think it has a good ring to it.
Mate, it's a belter. It's an absolute belter. I know that you've just picked Slide Away, by the way. Is Slide Away going to be the tune that you walk out to on March the 6th, or have you got something else?
I've got something else in mind. Not far off, but
okay. All right.
Not giving much away.
No, I'll keep it on the app, pal. Yeah.
It'll get people going anyway.
That's what we like to hear. Now then, I saw that in the last 24 hours or so, you've announced a new management deal. You've teamed up with AJ's management team. Talk to me about the process of that, because obviously it's important with what you're doing inside the ring, but this is a game as well that evolves outside the ring as well, mate. So talk to me your thought process of signing that management deal.
Yeah. Well, when we was in the bubble, we had a little sit down, and had a chat with the 258 lads and Soapbox as well, who we've teamed up with now. Because obviously, I plan on having a long and successful career, and obviously, at the end of the day, what matters is me working in the gym. But you want for me to be putting all that work in, you want them rewards as well. Because you see, loads of fighters working hard, but there's not loads of fighters who it necessarily pays off for. So we've done the deal with 258 and Soapbox, and I think that's what's going to. I don't think there's anyone better who could be guiding me in the right direction. Like we've seen with AJ, I don't think there's a better marketable fighter out there, to be honest. So can't really go far wrong with the team I've got round me now.
Absolutely. Talk to me about the decision about turning pro. For those that don't know too much about you, you're 19 years of age and obviously carry that famous name. But, you know, this is your journey, and I'm sure that there would have been opportunities there to maybe stay amateur and work on various things. Why turn pro now, mate?
Yeah, we weren't far off like turning professional anyway. Ideally, if things had been normal, we'd have probably had another 12 months, or like maybe around that length of time staying in the amateurs. But with the way things turned out, yeah, I think it just came like, I mean, because even fighting in March for my debut, it's still going to be a year. More or less like bang on where I've water boxed. So I thought like doing it slightly earlier like outweighed waiting however long it's going to be before the amateurs get going again, because it's still not looking like it's going to be anytime soon.
Yeah, fair point.
But like since we made the decision, it's like a switch has been flipped, and I think I've improved more over the last 6 months than I have in my whole time in the amateurs. I think it's just been that extra kick up the backside and that extra motivation. And we've just seen a completely new level to in every area of my game. So it's definitely the best decision we could have made. And now I'm going to be nice and active, which is the main thing, really.
Absolutely.
Campbell, I was saying to Adam just now, of course, that, you know, I remember covering your father, Ricky Hatton's first fight in Kingsway Leisure Centre in Widnes on the 11th of September, 1997. He retired Colin McCauley after a round in a four-rounder. And then Ricky's next fight was at Madison Square Garden on the undercard of Nazim Hamid and Kevin Kelly on a raucous night there. Is there pressure on you? Because we didn't really know. I remember Ricky telling the story, slung his bag over his back after that Madison Square Garden fight and disappeared out into New York City. And no one knew who he was. But we all know who you are. You had a very high-profile launch within the bubble at Anthony Joshua's fight with Kubrat Pulev in December. We all talked to you then. We watched you work out. Do you accept that there's a lot of pressure on you? And what kind of advice does Dad give to you over that?
Yeah, there is that added pressure, which there's obviously a lot of expectation and a lot of interest around me from the start. But I've always dealt with that bit of pressure well. Obviously, never to this extent how it is now. But even in the amateurs, there is that little bit more interest around it when I used to box. But I've always thrived off it. It's always been a bit of a motivator for me, where I because I've got to be on my game all the time because there's that many eyes on. So I've always dealt with it well, but at the end of the day, all the eyes on me, it's me in there who's got to go and perform, which we're all really confident I'm gonna do. And my dad's just always said, he's always drilled into me about the composure, really, not letting me get in there and think, oh, I need to impress, I need to do this, I need to do that, just staying relaxed, really. And that's the main thing that my dad and Matthew have been drilling into me.
I found it extraordinary when we talked to you that you'd said that you'd never really watched a lot of his fights. You were very young as well at the time. But if there's one bit of advice that Ricky gives you at the moment that really, apart from composure, that really stays with you, is it? He's got so much brilliant advice for so many of the other young fighters he trains. What's the main bit of advice that he gives you about how you move forward now?
Stay out the pub, I think, is always
good. Yeah.
Yeah. Do as I say, not as I do.
Perfect.
Campbell, just on that, because I've watched plenty of your interviews over the last 4 to 6 weeks. And you come across an incredibly mature young man. You're 19 years of age. And I just want to ask you a question about being a young dad. Do you think that has helped with your focus now on your professional career? Because other 19-year-old lads, they're out, like you've just said, they're in the boozer, they're doing whatever they're doing, and they've probably got their eyes on various other things. But you seem incredibly driven and focused on your craft.
Yeah, definitely. It's a big motivator because I can't afford to slip up now, because it's not just my future that I'm working towards building. Like if I slip up, I slip up for mine and my daughter's future, which I'm not going to let happen. So I've got to work that extra bit harder than any other. I've turned 20 this month, so I've got to work harder than every other 20-year-old who's not in this position.
What a wonderful opportunity as well. The card that you're on March the 6th, mate, there's going to be a lot of eyes, obviously, on the main event that particular night. Yes. But like you said, it's your debut. It's a wonderful opportunity for you to make a stamp and make an impression and to showcase your talents, the things that you've been working on in the gym with your uncle, and put them on that big pay-per-view platform.
Yeah, definitely. I couldn't have asked for much better, really. A pay-per-view card with such a top fight. And such an interesting fight for the main event that we saw last time, because it was quite a dramatic first fight where Dillian was in complete control and then it just switched with one shot, didn't it? Where with the heavyweights, it could happen again, or it could carry on with Dillian in control. I just don't have a clue. So there's a lot of excitement on that night and really looking forward to it.
Listen, I've got two more things, right? This is not boxing related. Like yourself, I'm a massive Oasis fan, right? Now, your dad obviously had the brothers walk him and carry his belts to a ring at one particular time. Since then, obviously, they've parted ways. Oasis isn't currently a thing. Do you think you can be the man, right? You can be the man to bring Oasis back together, pal. Can we make that happen?
I'll have a good go. Don't know if I'll be able to do it, but I'll have a good go.
I've got another one. Will we ever see you pictured like Ricky was with Bernard Manning in a pair of underpants together? Will we ever see you pictured in your underpants with a comedian?
I don't know about that one.
Let's hope not.
Don't know about
that
one.
Stay out of the pub.
Yeah. The other one was about...
If I've been to the pub, there's a very good chance...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
On March the 20th, we could be getting ourselves a new cruiserweight world champion. The task is very, very tough. Christoph Glowacki stands in the way of Lawrence Okorie. Lawrence joined myself and Gareth on the show on Saturday night to talk about the prospect of having his hand raised and having some gold around his waist.
Undefeated and the new WBO International Cruiserweight Champion, the Sauce, Lawrence Okorie.
That's an introduction for our next guest. You're listening to Fight Night here on TalkSport. I'm Adam Cattrall, Gareth Davies alongside me. We spoke a little earlier on in the show about Carl Frampton being the next Brit up for a world title on February 27th. After him, it will be this man, Lawrence Okorie, March the 20th, getting his opportunity at becoming the cruiserweight champion of the world. Lawrence, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm well, thanks. Thank you so much for that intro. I loved it. I was here shadow boxing.
Listen, when we've had you on the show in previous times, and our audience will know this, you are one of the most relaxed, laid-back dudes in this game, right? That goes in front of you. But how testing was it when, obviously, this fight was originally scheduled for the back end of last year, your opponent tested positive for COVID, and therefore your opportunity fighting for a world title was put on hold. What was going on in your mind during that particular period, mate?
It was obviously difficult. You know, I had little personal goals. You know, I wanted to win the world title. I think it might have been a fight sooner than AJ and all these little things. But then ultimately, you know, I still felt happy and blessed to be boxing during obviously what's been going on with the whole world. So it was a mix of emotions. Obviously, I wanted to box for the world title, but otherwise, I was just happy to be out there, you know, fighting again. So it was a bittersweet one, but, you know, we moved.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, obviously, disappointment at that particular time. You go through the motions of fight week and taking care of an opponent that you're kind of on a lose-lose situation because you were supposed to take care of him. You do that. Talk to me about then the next conversation when the fight gets rebooked, because then I've no doubt there was a smile on your face and straight back into camp, chomping at the bit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, it was good, you know. It was an opportunity to shake off ring rust, if that is such a thing, you know. And just get in there and make a small statement. So it was good. It was good to go in there, you know, show a little bit of what me and Shane McGuigan have been working on in the gym. And yeah, like obviously, when you get the news, for me, obviously, I won the European title, and then it was kind of like, okay, yeah, well, you somehow, you know, you've got the world title shot because of, you know, Gawacki versus Bradis, this and another. Where this one felt like a final eliminator, where it's like, all right, listen, when you win this fight, you're boxed for the world title. So now I feel like mentally a lot more prepared. And not that I was ever unprepared, but it felt a lot more real. Like, you know what, win this one, world title fight next. Now it's not been sprung on me. It's like I've had a long time to kind of get my head around it all. So I just feel good and ready to go on and put in a great performance.
Let's hope you do, Lawrence. Happy New Year to you. The guy you're facing, Krzysztof Glowacki, has only lost twice to Alexander Usyk and Maris Bradis. Obviously, Bradis has gone over and now holds the IBF title. Glowacki's a two-time world champion. You must be looking at this, so must Shane McGuigan, your trainer and your whole camp and Eddie Hearn and all these guys, as this is your first real test in a really big fight.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that in terms of, you know, obviously the pedigree and the experience that this guy's got, you know, there's no escaping it. You know, he's only lost to two great fighters who, you know, go down as some of the best cruiserweights potentially in history, especially in Usyk. So for me to add my name to that list, you know, it's the start of my own journey of, you know, recognised greatness. You know, I already feel great within myself, but I need to obviously go and prove it on fight nights. But I feel more than capable of, you know, winning this fight. Although, you know, I tell myself, you know, you're the underdog and stuff like that. You know, he's got experience in this. I just feel like with just boxing tactics and just overall dimensions and just reality, you know, the reality is I'm 6'5". The guy I'm boxing 6 foot, you know, 6'1". I'm strong, I'm young, you know, I've got so much to gain with a victory. So I just feel like I'm going to do everything in my power to have my hand raised.
And he's a southpaw, so your right hand comes into effect, of course.
Yeah. Sorry, before we carry on, I just wanted to quickly make a quick statement that you have to be one of the best interviewers in the game. But go on, carry on.
He's booking us up. Just, I like it.
No, but it's... I just think he's a sneaky kind of fighter, but I've always said this to you, you know, whenever we've talked and, you know, people have always said you've got a smash and grab style. You get in close and you clinch, but you've got your big, powerful right hand and your jab on the outside. I know that Shane McGuigan's making you crouch more. He's making you more stable on your feet, all those kind of things we talked about, Lawrence. But
yeah.
Surely, if you beat Glowacki, do you not want to immediately unify and go after Bradis and go after the IBF title as well as having the WBO?
100%. You know, I try not to take my eyes off the ball, you know, because nothing is guaranteed. It's not like I just walk in and pick it up. I have to actually fight. But I've already made it very, very, very clear to Eddie Hearn, and obviously Shane's on board as well, that I won't be doing this unless, of course, you never know what happens with other champions. But my thing is I'm going straight in, like, I'm 28 years old now, and you know, I just really want to get it all done. Like, I want to go down as one of Britain's best, you know, cruiserweights/heavyweights, just one of the best boxers out of Britain. So to do that, I have to be in world title fights, in unification fights, win. So that's really the aim. You know, I gain no satisfaction from, for example, the fight I had last. You know, it looks nice and it's brilliant. Everyone's saying, "Oh, mate, you're so great." But when I'm actually at home by myself, you know, and I'm thinking to myself about, you know, what I've done and why I'm training and all this, it's for world titles, it's for unifications, it's for the fights where people say, I don't know, you know, he's really, I don't know if he can do it. And then I go and do it. That's what I'm really looking forward to.
Just on that, Lawrence, because you bring up something which you... This is obviously your own personal journey, right? And you have got your own personal ambitions of becoming world champion. But listen, we've documented your journey from working at the burger bar to where you're at right now, and that is inspirational within itself. What have the messages been like from young people up and down the country who have followed you from start to finish, and now you're fighting for a world title? What are those messages of support and inspiration like, and how much is it having an effect on I suppose, fueling your own personal fire?
No, of course, it's one of my main motivating factors is that, you know, I get not only, you know, sent to my, you know, personal Instagrams and stuff like that, it's generally like just in the area, just, man, I go to the same school as you, or my little sister will tell me stuff, or, you know, my little brother, or he's not so little, but one of my brothers works in a school as well, and he's like, mate, like he gets bombarded by students and stuff. You know, I don't want to say weird, it's just, to me, it just adds a lot of fuel and motivation because, of course, I'm my own person and, you know, I have my own reasons for doing stuff. But it means a lot when my own personal journey has, even if it's a small effect, has an effect on someone else, you know, and says, you know, I was bullied or I was overweight or I'm doing this and I want to go into, you know, becoming an actor or opening my own law firm or whatever. Just allow people to have a little bit more belief in what they're doing as well, because I managed to change my life. So it's important, and it's one of my main motivating factors, which is, you know, another reason why I'm going to fight so hard in a few weeks' time.
Mate, it's going to be something nice special one. going to your brother's school, yeah, and slapping that belt on and doing the speech in the assembly or something. That'd be amazing.
That's the one. And I'll be like, everyone be nice to Mr. O'Cody, you know what I mean?
Now, on the undercard of that world title fight between Lawrence Okolie and Christoph Glowacki is a man making his debut. He made a big splash in Team GB and has decided to turn professional. He is the main sparring partner for the likes of Anthony Joshua, Daniel Dubois and Joe Joyce. It is, of course, Solomon Dacres. And he is joining us on the show right now.
With boxing, the end result was, what can you make of it? It's all on yourself. It's an individual sport. And I thought, if I can push myself as far as I can, the sky's the limit in the sport sort of thing. So with boxing, it was more of a, it's on my own shoulders.
And then the decision to turn pro, because obviously that we're currently living through this crazy time, this pandemic time. You were doing incredibly well with Team GB, and I'm sure there were conversations there of various aspects that and routes that you could take in the amateur game. Yeah. Was the pandemic kind of the catalyst to kick you into the pro game? Was that the inspiration to get you going?
Yeah, I suppose so. In a way, I was looking to turn pro after the Olympic cycle anyway. So that's 4 years on the GB squad there or thereabouts I've had. So I was looking to turn pro in that level of experience anyway. So with it being postponed, qualifications still having to take place, it was a matter of, am I going to wait for 6 months for potentially no reason, or am I going to just take things into my own hands and get cracking and fighting, which is what I wanted to do, and turn pro, which was ultimately what I was looking forward to doing anyway.
Great to have you on the show, Solomon. I can't wait for your debut. I'm going to ask you some quick fire questions because we're running out of time tonight, and I do appreciate you staying up late because you're meant to be in bed. Fraser Clark, Olympic medal in Japan, gold, silver or bronze?
He's got the potential to go all the way. So it's up to him how hard he trains.
Anthony Joshua, Daniel Dubois, Joe Joyce, who's the hardest guy you've sparred with?
All very hard spars. Technically, they're all different. Joyce is one of those, though. It's a hard spar, no matter how many rounds you do with him. It's a hard slug with Joe Joyce every time.
Yeah. And what about the other two?
Yeah, and the other two are very, very powerful. Dubois got that one-hit power. Joshua's got that power, but he's also got the speed and the combination punching to go with it. So they're all very good technically, so they're all very, very tough spars, all of them.
Who wins out of Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua in the summer, probably in the Middle East?
That's brutal. That's a brutal question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have to tune in to find out, I think.
No, I will. No, no. On your debut on Fight Night, you do not sit on the fence. You're a big, strong heavyweight. You're well up after your bedtime. I want an answer. You may be wrong, you may be right, but I just need to know. And Anthony or Tyson aren't going to give you a kind of backhander if you choose one or the other.
No. I can't be the Mystic Meg, you know, but... It's going to have to be one of those where you have to watch and find out, because I honestly don't know, to be honest.
Love it.
I'm assuming you were a back row forward and a number eight or a lock or a flanker.
Yeah, exactly that.
And a final one for me. I know Adam's got to get a question. Final one for me. Are we going to see you in a world title fight one day?
Absolutely. That's the goal from me, to get to the world title level. Like, my debut is on the Lawrence Okolie world title undercard. I want to be headlining those world title cards myself, definitely.
Solomon, just a quick one on, obviously, the decision with turning pro. And Gareth just mentioned there some of the elite level guys that you've been in with when it comes to sparring. How much confidence did you take from those spars? And how much of that confidence then influenced your decision to turn pro at this particular stage?
Yeah, you take lots of confidence from it. You know, if you're there sparring world champions like Joshua and you're sparring him a few weeks later, he's going and knocking guys out in an undisputed world title fight, and you're thinking, I had a good spar with him a couple of weeks
ago.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's giving you great confidence. And for me, not even having had a pro fight yet, thinking the development process, you definitely get confidence from it 100%.
We're looking forward to you putting all this in action, man. Because
your
management team, Sam. He's bigging you up, man. He's giving it us in the ears. So we're ready. We're ready for some fireworks on March the 20th. Let me tell you,
I'm ready. I'm ready as well, man. I can't wait to get going. Definitely.
Time to move away from boxing for just a split second, because last weekend at UFC 257. You may have noticed that there was quite a big fight between Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor. I was lucky enough to be on Fight Island, so myself and Gareth picked the bones out of the main event.
Live from Etihad Arena on Fight Island in Abu Dhabi,
kicks are very important for Dustin. Got to get through the early part of the fight.
Solid left hand from Conor.
You just can't take him on the end of the punches.
No, man, you can't sit out here at this range and play with McGregor.
Oh, that leg's beat up, man.
He's got to go back to the count. Big left and now right.
I felt like this was a title fight. If Khabib's not coming back, me and Conor, the two best guys, I think this is a title fight. I'm the champion.
Stunner on Fight Island as they attend to Conor. Dustin Poirier has produced the biggest win of his career by a mile.
Styles make fights. There's many great stylistic matchups out there. Me, myself, and Dustin are 1-1. Myself and Nate are 1-1. I'll regroup and pick myself up, you know what I mean? Get up off the floor and go again, and that's it.
What a night it was, UFC 257 last weekend, or the early hours of the morning it was, wasn't it, when Dustin Poirier, the Diamond, took care of the notorious Conor McGregor in their rematch. Conor obviously won the first one, Dustin's won the second one, and as they were both alluding to there, they are now 1-1 setting up the possibility of a trilogy in the future. What a night, and not only that, on the co-main event we had probably one of the best UFC debuts of all time in Michael Chandler, which we'll get to in a minute. He was absolutely unbelievable against Dan Hooker. Listen, Gareth, we've seen Conor rise from the flames before. He's a specialist at this, at readjusting, going back, licking his wounds, dusting off the cobwebs and coming back and getting the job done. What do you envisage next for Conor, given the manner of the defeat last weekend against Dustin Poirier?
Well, he needs to listen to his own advice, which is lack of fights, his inactivity. He put his finger on the pulse immediately in his post-fight interview, Adam, saying that he hadn't been active enough. That's only down to him. You know, obviously COVID had a bearing on this as well, but I think that I think we're seeing the end of the Conor McGregor era. I mean, I think I wrote a column in the aftermath, a few hours after his defeat, and it reminded me of Nassim Hamed 20 years ago, after his defeat to Marco Antonio Barrera. I know MMA is very different to boxing, you know, and I'm not a neophyte. I've been around MMA quite a long time now, but I just got the sense that, rather like the first fight in 2014-13, where he blew Dustin away in 106 seconds at featherweight, there were, it looked like he had the intention and it looked like he might well do it. He might blow Dustin away in that first round. And I think he came close to finishing Dustin in that first round. It was a formidable Conor McGregor with a lot of self-belief. But I just, in the end, I mean, maybe I'm being hypocritical here, but he looked one-dimensional. He looked like he was boxing too much as opposed to using a whole repertoire, or just striking too much rather than using a whole repertoire. I thought he was extraordinary afterwards. He's always been a brilliant martial artist when he wins or loses.
Yeah,
like you say, 2016, against the better advice of so many observers, myself included, wondering whether he really should come back against Nate Diaz straight away. And he was phenomenal in the second fight. And he came through the same tunnel of issues and pain and went on to win an extraordinary fight. I just wonder whether, what is it, six fights in five years, whether the hundreds of millions that he's earned, the turning up in the billionaires, the proverbial sleeping in silk pajamas, as Marvin Hagler once said, you know, how can you go running at 5 a.m. when you're sleeping in silk pajamas? Whether the hunger of that wonderful start 7-8 years ago in the UFC, I interviewed him after the after his first victory in the UFC in Sweden for BT Sports, I think it was at the time, or UFC on Fox or whatever it was at the time, and he was extraordinary. And he was extraordinary, and he's still extraordinary. But I think Father Time waits for no one. And he may have wasted some time in his career by one thing and another, by earning so much, didn't need to fight, and all those factors. And if he can halt what I see as decline, what a lot of people see as decline, it will be an extraordinary comeback. But, I mean, I'll throw it to you. You were around him all week.
Yeah.
You know, is he... Muhammad Ali was a parody of himself in the end. Nazim Hamed didn't listen to Brendan England. He needed to work more on his defence as he moved up the levels. You know, is Conor McGregor still as hungry as he was? Can he get back right to the top? Does he beat Justin Gaethje? Does he beat Dustin Poirier in a rematch? Does he beat Nate Diaz? Can he beat Khabib? You know, can he beat Michael Chandler? A lot of these guys beat him, I think, you know?
I think you've touched upon the key word, and it's desire and hunger, isn't it? I think ability-wise, Conor McGregor is an extremely capable mixed martial artist, and I don't think he gets enough credit for being an elite-level mixed martial artist. The way that he spoke about the defeat afterwards, not just in a humble manner of taking defeat on the chin, just the way that he actually talked about the technicalities of how the defeat came about, that then said to me that this kid knows what he's doing. He's absolutely lasered in. And ability-wise, I think he can do all those things. It's going to come down to whether he wants to do all those things. I honestly believe as well, the shadow of the Manny Pacquiao fight, the possibility of that fight happening, kind of changed or maybe distracted his thought process. Because as you just said, he did when the cage door shut and the fight started, he wasn't the normal fluid mixed martial artist that we're used to seeing with the low hands. Yes, the karate stance was still there, but the hands were very high. It was a peekaboo guard. It was very boxing-esque, wasn't it, Gareth? Mm. And you think to yourself, that's a man preparing for something else. He's not preparing for an MMA fight. So maybe now with that fight on the back burner, because I think that's gone now, it comes down to a question of desire. Do you want it? Do you want to come and do you want to go out in the manner that you went out? I don't think he will. I think he'll lick his wounds, he'll dust himself off, and he'll think to himself, there's no way that my mixed martial arts career is finishing on the floor in Abu Dhabi. It's not happening that way. And there's loads of possibilities for him because he's still the money, he's still the guy. He spoke brilliantly all week. I think he is focused on his training. He maybe was just a bit distracted with the Manny Pacquiao thing. And if he comes back and solely focuses just on MMA, and beating the guys that are put in front of him, I think he's got a real chance. And there's two fights that I would look at right now for him. The first one would be Tony Ferguson, because he's coming off two losses. And I think that's, you know, he's still a highly ranked guy. And if Conor McGregor can get a win against Tony Ferguson, I think it puts him in a really strong position. There's also the Nate Diaz trilogy. There's that sat there. Nate's talking about coming down to 155 pounds at lightweight. There's also that. Dustin Poirier is going to go on his own journey now. And I think a fight maybe with Charles Oliveira is going to be set up for the world title. And if he can come through that, and that's not an easy task because Charles Oliveira is brilliant. But if he can come through that, and in the meantime, Conor's beaten someone like Tony Ferguson or Nate Diaz, the trilogy's there. Because Conor's always the money. And people are always going to go, I want to fight Conor McGregor because it brings the most amount of eyes and it brings me the most amount of cash. And if Dustin Poirier is the champion at that particular time, what a wonderful narrative to set up for the third fight between those two. But again, like I said, right at the start of this, it comes down to whether he wants to do it because as you rightfully pointed out, he rocked up in Abu Dhabi on the biggest yacht I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, it wasn't a yacht. It was a cruise liner, mate.
Exactly. You know, it was a billionaire's boat. I mean, look, you raise a lot of interesting points there, you know, and we haven't even spoken about Michael Chandler yet either.
Oh,
you know?
He was a real.
You know, I mean, I've known Michael a long time and, you know, been around him a lot. And he's a very, very formidable, you know, he's like a mini Mike Tyson when he fights, you know. He's either going to destroy or be destroyed. It's as simple as that. I think one of the things, Conor was extraordinarily successful at featherweight. He's not the biggest lightweight in the world. But I think, like you say, there's also the question of Khabib Nurmagomedov, who is, to use a boxing term, kind of a champion in recess at the moment, isn't it? He's retired, so why haven't they stripped him of the title, you know?
So I think that's coming. I think, listen, Khabib is a man of his word. I think he's staying out the way for a period of time. Somebody's got to do something very, very special to get him back in the octagon. I'm convinced of that. Dustin Poirier right now is the best lightweight on the planet. And he's as he says himself, he is the uncrowned king. He's got to go out there and whether he's got to do another fight in order to get that belt, then so be it. But for me, Dustin Poirier, what a guy. What a fantastic performance.
You only have to look at his, you know, he gets beaten by Conor McGregor and he's been beaten by Khabib Nurmagomedov. But in the middle of all of that, victories over the likes of Anthony Pettis, Justin Gaethje,
he's unreal.
Eddie Alvarez, you know, these are formidable, Dan Hooker as well. They're formidable fighters. And, you know, he's got better and better. I remember watching Dustin years and years and years ago. And he's got an extraordinary ground game as well. And I wondered whether he was actually going to submit Conor in this fight, get him to the ground.
Yeah, real possibility,
It was a real possibility. You know, I think Conor could go on fighting. Let me put this straight, because there'll be a lot of Conor McGregor fans listening to this live tonight or listening to the podcast. He has been an extraordinary fighter. He's not just a brilliant marketeer. Mm-hmm. He hasn't just done brilliant things to the UFC. I think, you know, and with Floyd Mayweather, I think five of the top six UFC pay-per-views belong to Conor McGregor fights. He's so brilliant. He's so talented.
He's a once-in-a-generation athlete. He's a once-in-a-generation athlete.
He's so divisive as well that he draws people to the sport. He's got his act right. I don't think he'll fight more than two or three more times, and he's got to pick very carefully when he does fight. I think Tony Ferguson's a tough fight. Justin Gaethje's a tough fight. You know, there's Poirier, the Poirier rematch, I think, does big money. And the UFC's decision is, do they get Khabib to vacate and put Poirier in with Charles Oliveira, as you say, or Michael Chandler, which is another. It would really draw an audience, that fight, because of what Michael Chandler's just done.
Absolutely.
With his call out, his leap off the octagon wall. You know, it's his call out afterwards, the manner in which he put Dan Hooker away. And Dan Hooker's got an extraordinary chin, remember?
Yeah.
One of the best chins in the division or even in the UFC. So it's how it all stacks up. They are Machiavellian. They're about making money. And it wouldn't surprise me to see Conor in with Dustin Poirier next in a trilogy fight. And I see that the PR machine around John Kavanagh was calling for that in the week after as well. So it's very, very interesting. And he always brings intrigue and eyes to the sport. And he always will do.
Coming up on February 27th, there is a monster fight taking place in New Zealand. Do not let this pass you by. You will know one of the participants for sure in Joseph Parker. He's taking on Junior Farr. It is a massive, massive fight. Obviously, local pride at stake, but also for the ramifications of the heavyweight division. The winner of this gets themselves incredibly close to another shot, maybe for Joe, at a world title. Our favourite Kiwi joined us on the show for a bit of a chinwag. Here he is, Mr. Parker.
This will be the biggest fight domestically, just because of what at stake. What's at stake? You know, we're both ranked in the top 10 in the world. We have some history as amateurs, but then also we're from the same place. We pretty much live like 15 minutes from each other.
Wow!
No. So in terms of domestic fights, this will be the biggest for me.
Well, just on that, because like I said, you prepare for fights in Vegas, over here in the UK, and various places in the world. So therefore, I suppose being at home in New Zealand training and doing your thing, even though you train a lot in Las Vegas, you can kind of escape the conversations of a fight. I bet you can't move right now for fans seeing you in the local supermarket or wherever it may be talking about this fight, because it is absolutely ginormous over your way.
It's a very, like you say, it is a ginormous fight here in New Zealand. I think around the world, it's not so big, just because Junior Farr doesn't really have a massive profile, even though he's ranked number 5 in the WBO. But here in New Zealand, it's a big difference from training in Vegas. It's a big difference from flying over to the UK. It's actually nice to be back here home and looking forward to fighting in front of a big crowd. But also, I'm able to train, see my family daily. And I know what I have to do. I know what I have to do in this fight to make a statement. I know I have to go in there and take care of business, let my hands go, because I know when I let my hands go, I can do a lot of damage. And as of recent times, I haven't done that. So the goal is to go in there and let it go.
Joseph, Junior Farr, I think, is unbeaten in 18 or 19. As you say, it's a massive, I don't say local fight, but it's a massive fight down under.
Yeah.
I think the Spark Arena's are 12,000. Are you allowed full crowd in? How's it going to work? Do you know?
Yeah, we're very fortunate down here in New Zealand where things are still quite normal. You know, and my love and prayers go out to all of you guys out there, because I know you guys are on lockdown, or most of the country is, but we are able to have crowds here. We are able to have people at the fight. So, you know, nothing has changed. We haven't been hit with, COVID again. So we're very blessed and fortunate. We have to consider ourselves very lucky.
Arguably, this is a massive fight because the victor is right up there. You're both very, very high together in the IBF rankings, I believe. So it's like you're like 5 and 7 or something in the IBF rankings. So the winner of this is only a fight away from the Furies, the Joshuas, another one of those big fights. But are you still really genuinely after a fight with Derek Chisora if you beat Junior Farr?
I actually don't really care who I fight after. My main focus is Junior Farr. And there is unfinished business there because, you know, I had to pull out of the fight for health issues. And it's not
spider bite. It feels,
spider bite. Spider bite that really causes me a lot of damage. No, but it's not fair for him because he was preparing for the fight. And I still want to fight him. He's got a big mouth and he thinks he can beat me. And I feel like I can knock him out. But I have to take care of business first before I even look at any other fight.
The thing I like about this fight, Joe, right, is the needle. I always love needle in a fight. I like it when there's a little bit of animosity between you. And as you've said, you've got history from amateurs, and he does like to chat a bit, doesn't he? There's old Junior Farr. He does like to try and rev you up a bit, mate.
Yeah, I know he's saying, you know, he's not being impressed with my fight and I lack power and saying this and that. And of course, people can say whatever they want to say, and that's good. If he's saying these things to give himself confidence, I like that. But when you're in the ring and when a bell goes, there's not many things you're able to say in the ring. You know, it's all about letting your hands go and seeing who's going to do the most damage. And I feel like, you know, the boxing is a game where you want to go in there and you knock out your opponent. You know, that is the goal. So when I'm in there, you know, we can be nice to each other before the fight and after the fight. But when I'm in there, I really want to take his head off. And I know he wants to do the same.
Will there be a YouTube video post-fight, obviously, after the victory? I'm just trying to think whether you're going to be making a Rocky Balboa thing or something, man. What are you going to be making?
Hey, you send me a list of suggestions.
Yeah.
And we'll work on whatever you suggest.
There's got to be some Rocky in there, Gareth, Anthony. You know what I mean? I mean, the guy's absolutely... My favourite one still to this day is the Anchorman scene when you sat on the pool table and you're singing away there. That's still my favourite one to this day, mate.
Did I dream this, or did you do Grease once as
well? Yeah, of course he has. He's done them all, mate. He's done every film on the planet.
I'm trying to think of one.
Besides from the training and the hard work, it's always important to have fun and relax.
Yeah.
And these are the things that keep us relaxed. So, of course, we've got to train and run, punch the bag and do this and do that. But sometimes we've just got to relax and make some funny videos.
Mm. Listen, I recently was fortunate enough to be covering a bit of UFC. And obviously, there was a New Zealand fighter involved in that, in Dan Hooker. And I know that he's connected to City Kickboxing, which is obviously connected to Junior Far. But the lads, the New Zealand lads that were all in that camp, every single one of them, man, were buzzing about this fight. It's just good to be able to speak to an athlete that is going to compete in front of a crowd in normal times. I know that the world's weird all over the place, but that, again, must be something that you're incredibly excited about, because the world is in disarray, but you're getting an opportunity to do your thing, the thing that you love, in front of a packed stadium.
Oh, listen, the excitement, and the closer we get to the fight, the more excited, the more... Not ego, just the more, you know, we want to be in there and fighting in front of our home crowd.
Yeah.
And again, there's a lot of fights around the world fighting behind closed doors with no audience, no crowd. So we are very blessed, and we're going to make the most of the opportunity. We want to come in here both 100% and give it everything we have, because there's going to be an audience, there's going to be a crowd, there's going to be people watching this fight. And like you say, the winner is going to be elevated to be, you know, getting closer to fighting for that world title. So it is a very important fight here in this part of the world.
Joseph, I'm going to push you here. I've looked at his record. He hasn't been in against anyone of the quality that you fought or yourself. You look at your own record: Joshua, Huey Fury, Dillian White, Andy Ruiz Jr., Dimitrenko, all these guys. Give us a clean, clear prediction and then sing us a song out of the break, please.
So, you know, I always say that I'm going to knock someone out between rounds 1 and 12.
Okay, that's fine.
For this fight, I want to knock him out, and I want to go in there and have fun and relax. Because when you go in there and have fun and relax, things flow naturally. And I guess I do want to knock him out. I'm not sure what round it is, but what song would you like me to sing?
Whatever song you're going to sing.
Mary
when you
had a little lamb.
Little lamb.
Much love to you, brother.
You're a superstar.
Hey, thank you guys for always having me on and the support. And I look forward to when we can catch up in the near future.
Absolutely. The beautiful thing about this fight, Joe, right, because of the time difference, we can get up, have our Cocoa Pops in the morning, little bit of breakfast, and watch you do your thing, man. You know what I mean?
That's lovely.
Listen, you hit the nail on the head when you said Cocoa Pops. That is a great start to the day.
So there you go. Action-packed show. Lots of stuff to get excited about as we build up to, hopefully, some top-class unification bouts over the next 4 to 5 months. We'll keep you posted with everything on that here on TalkSport. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Fight Night is what you're looking for on iTunes. And we'll catch you next time.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com.
Built Ford Tough, Built Ford Proud.